Now, Kina Roberts spent half of her childhood in a baboon camp in Botswana and the other half in a ritzy Philadelphia suburb. She's here to tell us her story. Great to have you with us, Kina.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, or good afternoon where we are. It's obviously morning in your Pennsylvania, I believe.
New York, actually.
New York,
but,
wow.
Same time zone, yeah.
Okay. So this is because your parents were primatologists?
Yes, that's right. They've been working in various countries in Africa for more than 30 years at this point, although they're retired now. So yeah, we were in Botswana because they had a study site in the Okavango Delta.
Okay, and which did you prefer, being in Botswana or being at the school?
Oh, I very much enjoyed being in Botswana. It was an incredible way to grow up. We lived in tents. We were outside all the time, among the animals and, you know, among all the plants and the incredible wildlife that was there. It was a wonderful place to be, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, wildlife indeed. I mean, we're talking not wildlife like I'd know it. We're talking about lions, which you came quite close to.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was... It was crazy to have the animals around us, and we had the unique example of being in a national park, which at the time wasn't really allowed. But since the camp had been established there for a number of decades before my parents took it over, we were sort of grandfathered in and allowed to be there. It's a pretty rare thing to have a research camp in a national park. I don't believe there are many of those situations. So it was, you know, besides being an unusual story, I think it's probably one that would be unlikely to happen again, given the protections that are on national parks now.
Yeah, of course. And of course, the other animals that we're close to were the baboons in the colony that your parents were studying. What were they like? They're very intelligent creatures, aren't they?
They're extremely intelligent, and I think baboons sometimes get a bad rap from people, which is undeserved, so I'm here to you know, help carry the banner in their favor. They're incredibly smart. They have a very interesting social structure, and given that my parents spent so much time with them, and later I did when I started sort of working with them, we knew all the individuals. We knew their families. We could see them grow up. We could see them have friendships. We could see them have their kids, and we got very attached to them. They all had personalities. And we knew them all really well. It was fascinating.
And apparently they love nail polish.
They do. I mean, my sister and I, we didn't have a ton to do there in our spare time. We read a lot, obviously. But yeah, we got really into making friendship bracelets and painting our toes. And the baboons just thought it was fascinating. They would come over and kind of poke your toes and pull on the bracelets and, you know, check out what's new. They like the colors, I think.
Oh, were they all completely free and wild, or were they in an enclosure?
They were completely free and wild. The national park is quite big. They have a home range, so we had sort of a, I don't know, 20, 30K on either side area where they would sort of stay into, because they would run into other baboon troops. So they had a certain area that they stayed in, but it was all voluntary. I mean, they sort of had their own system.
And with all these animals, that you were never in danger, you were never afraid?
You know, that's a really good question. I think that I got more afraid the older I got and the more I understood what was actually going on. When I was a small child, we were in Kenya. There weren't dangerous animals where we lived there, but there were certainly animals. So the idea of being around wildlife, just kind of sharing space with them, wasn't new to me. The idea that we would sort of have lions around was a little bit scary, but also it felt normal to me. It wasn't a big change like it would if you came from, you know, the U.S. and were sort of plopped there, having grown up in the U.S. It was scary. But I think that we sort of developed sort of a healthy respect for the animals. We didn't bother. We tried not to bother them. I hope we didn't. And, you know, we sort of tried to stay out of their way and respect them. And for most animals, that seemed to work pretty well. Obviously, hippos are sort of unpredictable.
Yeah, I was reading all about the different animals. It says if you ever have to run away from a lion, climb a high tree, because unlike other cats, they don't like climbing trees.
Yes, they can climb trees, but if you pick a difficult one, they'll just say, not into it.
Yeah. And you mentioned hippos. Escaping from a crocodile is not quite the same as escaping from a hippo.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's something we learned from the guys that we worked with there, who are locals. And, you know, hippos sort of chomp at things on the surface and, you know, you gotta swim under to get away from them. fortunately, we never had to try that, but it was important to bear in mind.
Yeah, of course. And there must have been things that you can't really control. I mean, you know, creatures. Were the scorpions out there?
There were scorpions. Not really the big scary ones that you sort of think about. Those were more, I think, down in the Kalahari Desert in the south part of the country. But we had little ones. And sometimes, oddly enough, they would, I mean, we always had the sort of adage that you shake out your shoes before you put them on just in case anything's in there. That wasn't really a problem, but I did get a scorpion in one of my t-shirts once when I was about 8 or 9, and it stung me on my back. Fortunately, it was a really small one, but I don't know if you know the feeling that if you get school glue on your hands, it feels kind of stretchy and sticky. Mm. That's what it felt like. It was very unusual. It didn't hurt so much, but it definitely felt kind of stretchy for a while. But that was a very small scorpion. I think I got lucky.
And it must have been very hot out there. Presumably you were out there in their summer, were you?
Yes, exactly. So Christmas to me means heat, which is a little different, obviously, in the U.S. But it got incredibly hot there. So the funny thing about Botswana is that the country itself is mostly desert. And the Okavango, while it's very wet, obviously, where it is, especially during the flood season, it still sort of operates a bit like a desert. So very, very cold nights during the winter and very, very hot days, and especially so in their summer. It got up to be, I don't know, 130 degrees Fahrenheit,
wow.
Up to 40 feet occasionally. Very, very hot.
Crikey. Did you have access to lots of fresh water?
We did, but only because we filtered it. We pumped it out of the river into a tank, and then we had some filters we brought with us. So a lot of time was spent refilling the filters and drinking the water and refilling the filters. But fortunately, we did have access to plenty of water.
And how were you schooled out there? For the 6 months you were out there, how were you schooled, or weren't you?
Yeah, I think especially when we were younger, it was sort of a learn this, and if you understand it, then, you know, go read a book. But there was a lot of sort of self-schooling involved. That became harder as we got older, and there were actual curricula for the school that we had to follow. But certainly when we were younger, it was reading, writing, and some basic math, which you could get through pretty quickly and go read some fun books.
Sounds ideal. I read a couple of things that you did learn, which wouldn't be on the normal school curriculum. Apparently you can wield a spear as easily as a pencil.
Yeah, that was some fun text that we added. I never actually had a spear, but, we did do a lot of outdoor stuff, you know, trying to create bird traps or, you know, build a bow and arrow, stuff like that, you know. Obviously, I was very, you know, whatever. I like fantasy books, so I tried to sort of recreate them with myself as the hero. And, you know, building weaponry out of brush was a key part of that.
Wow, and bird whistles from palm nuts.
Yeah, that was actually one that I learned from one of our research assistants, which was pretty cool. The baboons were fascinating, but there were very often days that they just sort of sat under a tree for 6 hours. So we had to find something to do with our time. So he taught me how to make a whistle.
And one of the things you did that could have been a bit dangerous was you tried to make some homemade palm wine. What happened there?
Yeah, we did. My sister and I, we had this fascinating book about the plants of the Okavango and what people used them for. So as soon as we read that people could make wine out of palm syrup, palm wine, we thought, oh, well, we're going to try it. So we tried to tap a palm tree and we got some fluid out of it and we didn't know what to do with it. I think I was maybe 10 or 11 years old. So we put it in a Tupperware and it said it had to be out of the sun. So we put it in the storeroom and forgot about it. And 6 months or so later, my dad found it and wanted to know what it was. And we said, our wine is ready. and he said, you're not drinking this. There's no way I'm going to allow this. And I think it was highly fermented and probably poisoned by then.
Oh, dear. And the trouble is, if anything does go wrong, I guess, out there, you're not sort of close to a doctor's or a hospital. You're sort of in the middle of nowhere.
No, exactly. And that, I think, became sort of the big scary thing. Later when we were, and I think that this kind of stuff only became available later, but we did have something called disaster insurance at one point where we could, we paid, it was like any insurance plan, we paid into it and then we got a membership, and if we needed to hire a helicopter, we could. But it was very much sort of self-medicine.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We brought out a lot of kit and just hoped we didn't have to use it for the most part.
So in the other 6 months, when your family lived in the US, you say this was even more treacherous. You went to a private school. How did you get on? Because presumably if you've not been there for 6 months of the year, you're always treated like the new girl.
Always, yeah. And it was a little bit better because we always were going back to the same school, so kids at least sort of knew who I was. They couldn't really explain why I disappeared and came back at odd times of the year. But yeah, being constantly treated like the new kid was definitely challenging, and especially the fact that, you know, they didn't really understand where I'd gone or what we were doing, and I didn't really know how to explain it, so I just sort of didn't talk about it. So it was very hard for them to sort of get any context for what my life had been like since they'd seen me the last time. And similarly, I didn't understand what, you know, kids grow up really fast, and 6 months for a middle schooler is an eternity. So yeah. I missed everything. You know, I was behind on, you know, friendships and pop culture and, you know, who was dating who. And I just sort of was in a constant state of trying to keep up with what was going on.
Yeah, of course. And how many years did your parents do this study for? I mean, what ages were you when you were doing the Botswana 6 months?
We first went to Botswana when I was 8, and we sort of left camp when I was in university. So 11 years, I believe. The camp, it was still there for a couple of years after that, but we weren't there. We had a film crew there for a little bit, and then it closed down. And we, you know, the whole point of having a camp in a reserve and what we'd agreed to at the beginning was to let it have no permanent structures and have the camp be able to turn back into the wilderness. And when we took everything down, that's what happened.
Yeah. It must have been very sad. You must miss it, or you must have missed it then.
I do. I miss it a lot. It was a magical place. I mean, I liken it to Narnia in the book, and it really felt like that to me. It was a world that I was privileged enough to live in and then couldn't go back to. And there is a certain sense of loss with that. As if someone says, you know, here's this incredible way to grow up, but you can't ever have it again.
Mm.
I'm obviously incredibly fortunate and glad that I had it, but yeah, I'm very sad that I can never go back to it.
And did you ever want to follow in your parents' footsteps? I mean, are you doing a similar job now?
No,
you've just got children.
I don't care for academia.
Nearly as bad.
I do. Yeah, I don't care for academia. My parents work really hard, and they're students as well, but I saw how difficult it was to do research and publish papers, and it was not something I really wanted to do. But I do work, well, in university I volunteered in a primate lab because it felt homey to me, which is about as far as I got. But but I work in public health now. A big part of the latter part of the book is, well, what I hope is comes through is me realizing that the place that we lived isn't real Botswana. I mean, it's the magical fairyland that I got to be in, but people who live in Botswana don't, for the most part, live in the Delta. They live in towns, and they have, they live urban lives. And the HIV epidemic was hitting particularly hard when I was there, and I sort of began to understand that the world's problems are outside camp and outside the baboons. And I got really interested in HIV and trying to work in that field. So that's how I got involved in public health.
Wow. Well, it's a fascinating story. You must have some great memories, and you've put them all in a book called Wildlife, Dispatches from a Childhood of Baboons and Button Downs. So it's by Keena Roberts. You can buy the book from our website right now, tre.radio. And I wish you lots of luck with it, Keena. Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure, and I hope you have a great rest of your afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.